The Black Sheep by Amanda Watkins.
Michael and I strolled through the village, arm in arm. It was just before 11 o'clock on a beautiful late summer's evening, and we were on our way home from a quiz evening in the pub. The village was quiet, except for the sound of our footsteps and a distant owl hoot. I leaned my head on Michael's shoulder and said, "I love evenings like this. It's almost a pity to be going indoors." "I know what you mean," said Michael, "but it's a school night, so I guess we must." And we turned into our driveway. But something about the house didn't look right.
"That's odd," I said.
"What is?" asked Michael.
"Did you go back into the living room just before we left? Because I distinctly remember turning the light off."
"No, I was waiting for you at the door," said Michael.
"Well, look, the light is on and the curtains are closed," I said. "What shall we do? Shall we call the police?"
"Not yet," he said. "But if there's no one there, we'll look a bit daft, won't we? Let's go in and see."
We went indoors, shouting, "Hello!" loudly, and went straight into the living room. There, in an armchair, a bottle of Michael's Glenmorangie and a glass by his side, was a man, probably in his late 30s.
"Ah, hello! I let myself in, hope you don't mind."
"Darn good scotch, by the way," said our visitor.
"Oh, I'm so glad you like it," said Michael. "Would you mind telling me who the hell you are and how you got into our house?"
"Oh, of course, remiss of me. I'm Leo Peters."
"You know, your cousin Marion. I'm not surprised you didn't recognise me. We haven't seen each other since we were very small. Mum suggested that I visit you and said that your mother told her where you used to leave a key, so I let myself in. Hope you don't mind."
"My cousin Leo. Yes, I did remember him. And he was right. We hadn't seen each other for many years. He was a bit younger than me. We got all right as children, but he'd never really been able to settle down to anything as an adult."
"And to what do we owe the pleasure of this visit, Leo?" I said. "I haven't seen you or heard from you for years, and the last I heard was that you were enjoying bed and breakfast at Her Majesty's pleasure."
"Well, yes," he said. "Well, there was a bit of a misunderstanding between my last employer and myself. Much ado about nothing, really. And I was going to make up the shortfall. Just needed a bit more time, that's all. Anyway, before my incarceration, I'd been living with someone, but she'd gone and wanted nothing to do with me. And it seems I wasn't too popular in the town. So my mother suggested I go elsewhere for a while. Just a stopgap, honestly. If I can stay for a few days until I find my feet, sort of thing."
"Well, we can't very well throw you out, can we? So, well, OK, Leo, just for a few days while you sort yourself out," I said.
"Thanks, cuz. I'll be no trouble, honestly. You'll hardly know I'm here."
"No trouble. Hardly know I'm here. Yeah, right," said Michael after we'd gone upstairs to bed. "If he eats the way he was downing my best scotch, we'll know he's here all right."
"Oh, sorry, Michael, but what else could I do?" I said. "He's family. A bit of warning from my mother or Auntie Pauline would have been nice, though." So Leo stayed. Michael and I went to work as usual each morning, teaching at the local school, and Leo assured us he would be looking for work. He always nearly helped with the meals and the washing up, but somehow got distracted before he could actually do anything. He nearly mowed the lawn a few times, but somehow never quite got round to it.
"This is getting intolerable," hissed Michael one evening. "He has no intention of getting work or moving on." I had to admit he was right.
"Mind you," I said, "I don't suppose it's easy when you have a record for fraud."
"Well, true," said Michael, "but he's been here for 3 weeks now. You spoke to his mother, didn't you? Can't she persuade him to go home or something?"
Oh, not a chance, it seems, I said, and apparently he has a disastrous track record with women. They all fall for his charm, and he spins elaborate tales of why he's a bit short of cash. They believe every word, and hey presto, he's got a roof over his head, until the penny drops. And his brother just said it was time he took responsibility for himself. I know, said Michael. Why don't I take him to the pub tonight and see if they have any work behind the bar, or even helping out in the kitchen? Not that he's had much practice. Brilliant. Why didn't we think of that before? And as they employ people on a fairly casual basis, with any luck, they wouldn't want to know too much about where he's been for the past couple of years. Leo thought a trip to the pub was a great idea. Oh, sorry, old chap. Couldn't sub me, could you? Bit short of the old reddies at the moment. I was dying to know how they got on. Not too optimistic, said Michael after they got back. Jack said he didn't need any more bar staff at the moment, and they usually managed to serve food as well, but he was going to ask in the kitchen after they closed and let us know. Leo wasn't too keen on that idea. No, I don't suppose he was, I said. However, said Michael, there was one interesting development. Oh, yes, I said, do tell. Well, we just had our chat with Jack at the bar when Annie Lomax came in and caught the tail end of our conversation. She asked Leo if he was looking for work because she might have something for him. And this is where it got interesting. Go on, I said, what happened? Well, I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes. What? I said. Lust at first sight, said Michael. What? I exclaimed. No, it's true, said Michael. As soon as Annie said she might have some work going, I could tell he was about to make up some excuse when he stopped and looked at her. Then he smiled and said he'd love to hear more. So Annie bought a bottle of wine and off they went to a table for the next hour. Oh, I like it, I said. What next? Well, apparently he's going over to their depot tomorrow morning. I said he could use my bike, expecting him to instantly develop a limp, but he said that would be great. He does know they operate coach tours, doesn't he? I said. And he could end up counting holidaymakers on and off coaches in Blackpool or Kew Gardens ad infinitum. I guess so, said Michael. Anyway, we'll find out tomorrow, won't we? Leo did indeed cycle over to Lomax coach tours the following morning, and returned a couple of hours later, rushed upstairs and came down carrying a small bag. See you in a day or two, he shouted as he closed the front door after him. Well, that was quick, I said. Indeed, said Michael, and I guess it's love, because Annie didn't strike me as the sort of girl he'd go for. She'd been hosing down coaches before she came into the pub last night and was wearing dungarees and had muddy splodges all over her. He must really be smitten. Still, we mustn't grumble. It looks as though we'll have this half-term week all to ourselves. Leo returned 3 days later for the rest of his stuff, and we were amazed by the change in him. Annie's amazing, he gushed. Do you know, she stepped in straight from college when her father died suddenly, and she's been running the company with just her mother helping in the office and 4 regular drivers. She works all hours and even does basic maintenance on the coaches. And your place in this setup will be? Asked Michael. Well, I have to get an HGV licence, which shouldn't be too difficult. And in the meantime, I shall be acting as a sort of tour leader. Said Michael. I wouldn't have thought that was your sort of thing. Neither would I, said Leo. But honestly, I don't mind what I do as long as it's with Annie. Is this for real? Said Michael when he'd gone. It seems so, I said. I'd bumped into Jack in the post office that morning, and he said they'd been to the pub for a meal a couple of times, and they sit in a corner, gazing at each other and whispering sweet nothings. Oh, long may it last, I say, said Michael. This could be the making of him, and at his age, not before time. Over the next 5 months, Lomax coach tours went from strength to strength. Leo got his license and was very popular with the passengers. They bought another coach, took on 2 full-time mechanics, and travelled further afield. Michael and I were pleasantly surprised. Leo's mother was astonished. And his brother just snorted, "Ha! Wait." I met Annie one morning in the village shop.
"Well done, Annie. We're delighted the business is doing so well."
"Thank you," said Annie. "Yes, we're pleased as well. Leo has quite a sharp business brain, and so far all his ideas have paid off. Actually, he's wasted sitting behind the wheel of a coach, even though he's so popular with the passengers. So now that Mother is retiring, well, she is 76, we've decided that he should take over in the office. We've even given him a title, Director of Finance."
"Really?"
I said, although I could hardly hear anything above the clanging of alarm bells in my head.
Oh yes, and even more exciting, he has plans to expand into Europe."
"Do you think that's wise?" I asked.
"He's very confident," said Annie.
"In fact, he left early this morning to take the ferry across to Calais and do a recce to find suitable venues and hotels, etc., probably down in Spain. Although I rather fancy France. I shall miss him."
I don't doubt that for a minute," I said, and raced home.
"What shall we do? What shall we do?" I panicked.
"Oh, this is disastrous," said Michael.
"I really thought he'd turned a corner."
We went out to see Annie at the depot and see if there's anything we could do. We pulled up and went into the office.
"Annie, we think we'd better talk to you about Leo," Michael started to say.
Just then, the LCT minibus pulled up sharply outside and Leo got out. Annie went out and stood and looked at him, arms folded.
"I wondered how far you'd get," she said.
Leo looked sheepish.
"Nearly as far as the ferry terminal. Then I realised that I was about to make the biggest mistake of my life. All those years spent lying and cheating and convincing myself that I wanted money and excitement. It never brought me any satisfaction. Nothing did until I met you. I thought that maybe it was time I moved on to my next project. But then it dawned on me that I've had more satisfaction and fun washing down a muddy coach than I ever got conning someone out of a few quid. And that's all down to you, Annie, and I really love you. Can you ever forgive me?"
"Oh, Leo, I knew what you were up to. You may have made a career out of conning gullible women and fiddling the books of any firm daft enough to take you on. But you're with me now, and I can read you like a book. I knew exactly what your next step would be and got the bank to freeze all our accounts so you couldn't have gone much further."
I'm sorry," he said. "Are you going to call the police? I'll confess, honestly. I hope you can forgive me in time."
Tears were running down his face.
"No, Leo," she said. "I'm not going to call the police. This is what we're going to do. We're going to carry on building up this company. I must be mad, but I want us to stay together. So to that end, I think I should make an honest man of you, in more ways than one. And don't you think a recce to Europe would make a good honeymoon?" Leo was speechless. Michael and I had been rooted to the spot. I think our mouths were gaping in disbelief. I don't think they were aware that we were still there, so we turned and walked away.
"I love a wedding," I said. "Well, I'll need to go shopping, of course. I've got nothing to wear."
The Black Sheep was written and read by Amanda Watkins. The music, Straight, was from bensound.com.